One of the most important pieces of the Milwaukee Brewers organization is joining us today for Interrogation Tuesday. The one and only Charlie Green is up next. This is Locked On Brewers.
You are Locked On Brewers, your daily Milwaukee Brewers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Tuesday, everybody. Welcome in. I'm Dominic Catronio. This is Locked On Brewers. Thanks for making us your first listen of the day. Charlie Green is our guest, as we mentioned. And if you don't know the name, he's got an extensive resume, especially with the Brewers organization. He spent 15, now 16 seasons with the org. Currently the minor league field coordinator, which is a very, very important and very wide-ranging job. We get into that in the interview as well. And he's the catching instructor, a guy that you can thank for Omar Narvaez's development, as far as also Jonathan Lucroy's development. The list goes on of the guys he's helped and impacted in the Brewers organization, whether they stayed in the org or moved on to bigger and better. So he's got some great stories to tell about, you know, himself becoming a coach and also the guys that he's helped along the way, what things were like in the minor leagues this past year, finally getting back after it here in 2021 last year, given the year was canceled the year prior. As a minor league guy, I certainly can vouch for that. I know it was a really weird year. So to have everything back, almost back to normal, and also really good news from his end is that the minor league system does not seem to be impacted at all by whatever happens with the lockout. The only guys that would technically be ineligible would be 40-man roster guys. But obviously, the giant majority of minor league baseball is played by guys not on the 40-man roster. So thus, they are planning full steam ahead. And he gives clarity on what the schedule looks like for minor league players and for the minor league seasons. If you're listening from Appleton, if you're listening in Nashville, if you're listening in one of our other affiliate sites, that's where you can actually get excited for baseball, because you know opening day will be on time as it stands right now, not impacted by the lockout, but by actually scheduled for minor league baseball, which is great, great news for all of these towns across the country. Before we jump into the interview, you know I got to talk to you about Built Bar, of course. Built Bar, the great protein bar that doesn't taste like a protein bar. It actually tastes like a candy bar, maybe even better than a candy bar. It's covered in 100% real chocolate, only 130 calories, only 4 net carbs, 17 grams of sugar, and only 17 grams of protein and only 4 grams of sugar. I mean, it's the best of both worlds. You get that sweet treat that you need to get you through maybe that midday lull, but also it's actually healthy for you, and it's not going to taste chalky like other protein bars, right? Built Bar is actually got so many amazing flavors for you as well. We've talked about coconut almond, cookies and cream. Also, you got peanut butter brownie. I mean, the list is extensive. You can see their entire list of offerings at built.com. They're always coming up with limited time exclusives, different types of products. Like during the holidays, they had those little puffs that are like marshmallows. Fantastic stuff. They're always coming up with new ways for you to enjoy their amazingly nutritious and delicious protein bar. And we've got a promo code for if you want to try them out. Use LOCKED15, LOCKED15 at built.com, and you're going to get a 15% off a welcome order on your first order with built.com. Again, LOCKED15, and you're going to get 15% off at built.com.
Charlie Green joins us today. What a pleasure, Charlie. I got to ask, you know, give me the story. I love this story. You showed up at spring training. I don't want to give it away, but you showed up at Instructional League in 2004. I'll never forget it. You walked through the doors, and then the rest is history. But that's kind of, give us your story of how you got into coaching after you were done playing.
All right. I played 13 years, and I finished up in Durham and had minor knee surgery, and decided it was done. So 2004, I was technically on a player contract, but I was coaching in AA with the West Tennessee Diamondbacks, and Giovanni Soto was this second-year catching. He was a converted third baseman, so that was my deal to help him. And then later that fall, I sent resumes out. I actually mailed them, because I'm not sure I emailed anybody. I mailed them to Jack Zarensic, who was a scouting director with the Brewers, was my farm director with the Mets back years ago, and I've known him. And he said, would you be interested in possibly being a catching instructor for the Brewers? So I flew out to Phoenix, and that's where I met you in 2004, and the rest is history.
The rest, and just to follow up that, so you were in charge of, in 2003, you were on a player contract, and Bobby Four. Dickerson, you said, in 2004. Four, that's right, in West Tennessee.
Yeah.
And Bobby Dickerson was the manager of that club. I remember this whole story. And you were in charge of converting Giovanni Soto into a big league catcher. And you did that and then some. And you will never brag about this, but your tree of how many catchers you have converted, and not only converted, but also helped along into becoming really good big league catchers, is extensive. And people don't understand that you had your hand in guys like Martin Maldonado and in Jonathan Lucroy. And I mean, like, I'm bragging about you because you won't brag about yourself, but it's just such an incredible story. I mean, Giovanni Soto was the first one of many.
Yeah, I mean, that was something I was always passionate. I think I was a 217 career hitter, so I was an awful hitter. Like, I always joke, I would have caught for both teams had they let me, but unfortunately, I could only play for one team at a time. So, you know, something I was passionate about, and for years, it was undercoached. It was a position that was like undercoached, amateur ball, professionally, because the Brewers didn't have a catching instructor. They had someone fill in, a manager, during spring. And then once the season started, it was just, you know, I guess a free for all. So I came in and, you know, I enjoy working with the guys and all you guys. We had Nestor, yourself, Corcoran, I think Angel Salome might have been there. So we had a good group of guys, you know, and, you know, had some crazy stuff. I mean, but that's, I know development of catchers is, you know, something I've always taken pride in. And luckily I've been blessed with some guys who bought in and have shown improvement over the years.
Yeah, I got one more, Dom, because Carlos Corcoran, I say it to this day, of all the guys that I watched playing and it scouted, Carlos Corcoran is the best catcher I've ever seen in my life. I mean, this guy could really catch and throw, and he was awful when you first got your hands on him. I played with him in Helena, and he was a converted third baseman as well, but this guy turned himself into the best defensive catcher, and I'm going to stick to that, that I have ever seen in my entire life, and he couldn't hit. You called him El Periodico. What did you call him?
Greeny? The newspaper. He couldn't hit. Periodico. Yeah.
The he's newspaper yelling from the Spanish. Tower.
Yeah. But, you know, he ended up over 4 years in the big leagues. And But he had the best hands. He had a pillow. Like, honestly, he went probably months between drops. And he caught, you know, the guys we caught, Rogers and Gallardo. Oh. He had good stuff. So it wasn't like he was catching the powder puffs. So he, great career he had. I mean, the funny story about him, his first big league hit was off Paul Janish, an infielder. That's the funny one. He got his first big league hit off a shortstop in a blowout against Cincinnati. But, yeah, Corp had a hell of a career. But, like, you know, I love seeing guys develop. And, like, that to me is the challenge of coaching, is taking guys who, like, maybe the industry doesn't think is, like, this guy's a bona fide catcher, and then have them reach their goal, which is to play in the big leagues.
It's fantastic to hear the stories of a guy developing, because it's so hard. People don't realize how hard it is to develop a catcher. Obviously, you two guys know all about it. But in addition to your catching duties, you also have to help out as the minor league field coordinator. For those who don't know what that job entails, talking about being busy, can you kind of enlighten the fans on what it's like working as the minor league field coordinator for the Brewers?
Yeah, it's I'm in charge of the scheduling. So basically, I would say a good overview is I try to make sure it's a seamless transition between Milwaukee on down to our Dominican academy. So I'm making sure how we do bump plays, cuts and relays, making sure all the guys are getting their work in. So, like, I do all the scheduling during spring training, because we have, you know, 180 players, 50 staff, plus the big league side. So, you know, it's like orchestrating, you know, chaos for me. So, but I enjoy the spring, but it's been fun. It's I've learned. I started out as the catching guy, and then Eddie Cedar went to the big leagues, and I took Eddie's job, because Eddie had all the jobs in the minor leagues, and Vinny played for him, manager, outfield, base running. So I dabble in about everything. I fill in. Like, I've been when there's graduations in the system. Unfortunately, when there's funerals or whenever, I've been manager at all levels. Just about. I've been a pitching coach. I've filled in as an extra coach. So that's what I do. So I try to be well-rounded. I think that's what a good field coordinator is. He can handle any position on the field.
It's been crazy, especially the last 2 years for your job and figuring out what the minor league landscape is going to look like. Obviously, 2020 was canceled. Then we enter this new era in 2021 where every level, it seemed like, had a different special rule. You had the new 6-day weeks as well, with the off days on Monday. What was it like finally getting back after it here in 2021 across all of the affiliates in this new era of minor league baseball?
Well, after 2020, like we say, Friday the 13th in 2020, yeah, that's when we broke camp for 2 weeks or a few weeks, supposedly. And then summer camp happened in the big leagues. And then some of the guys got to go to the alternate site, which I never want to hear that term again, the alternate site. So those a few guys got to play, but most guys didn't get to play. So some of the guys finished in August or September of 19 and then didn't get another at bat until May of last year of 2021, because spring training was late because we couldn't come into the big leagues. So it was a very disjointed year for those guys. Some guys played independent ball, but for a lot of guys, they missed a year or a year plus out of their career. And it was, you know, that's time you'll never get back. But everyone was glad to be back on the field last year. Even with all the rules, you didn't hear any complaining. Guys are just happy to be playing.
So if anyone can't tell, Charlie is a mellow version of him right now.
I mean, I gotta sit still. I'm not in a cage, for sure.
This is Charlie Green right now to a T. I mean, the energy that you bring is so infectious, and that's what guys love about being around you. I gotta tell you, you know, as a coach, I mean, shoot, as just a scout, when I was scouting, I loved just talking to you, talking baseball. I still like doing that, obviously, but where does that come from? Like, I know that you were, really tight relationship with your dad. I know he was a coach for a long time. Is that where it's from, or is it just, you know, tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, my dad was a junior college coach, head coach down in Miami for 30 years, but he coached opposite. Like, he was very laid back, but the passion burned within. I'm passionate for the guys, you know, and I want the guys to feel that. Like, I'm excited every day. I was lucky enough to play for Ron Washington in AAA. He was my third base coach, and that guy never had a bad day at the yard. And so we always said, if I'm ever a coach, that's what I'm going to be like, no matter what, like rain delays, long travel. He was always the same guy. And I think players want that, like a coach that's all over the map. You know, I don't think guys trust them much, but Wash was always the same guy. And you see him on the big leagues, and it's the same guy. Like, that guy hasn't changed in 50 years in the game, you know? So, cause the game can get long. It's a long season for a lot of guys, you know, the travel, big leagues, or you get rookie ball. It's travel. It's a long year. Like, we're starting in February and go through September. And, you know, luckily every Monday's off now in the minor leagues, or it was last year, which is nice, but it's still a long grind. But I think the guys that have fun and passion, like I tell guys, I've never worked a day in my life. You know, I played 13 years, and I've been with the Brewers 18. So, you know, I've been lucky enough to do this.
That's phenomenal. And that Ron Washington, man, that sticks to me. I'm a former pupil of Ron Washington. So yeah, I absolutely agree with that statement of just never have a bad day at the ballpark and bring that positivity every day. As far as looking forward now into 2022, with obviously the lockout happening in Major League Baseball side, luckily, in a way, for you guys, you aren't really majorly affected as of now, right? Because you can explain this a lot better than a lot of folks in that, obviously, these guys, not everyone's on the 40-man, so these guys are going to be able to show up to camp on time. What does the timeline look like for minor league camp for the Brewers and really for the rest of the league?
Yeah, we're having a build-up camp. It's for February 23rd, so a lot of the younger guys, the newly drafted guys, because when you think about it, 2 years ago, we had a 5-round draft, and then a very limited instruction league with COVID. Last year, guys played, we had 20 rounds. We didn't have instruction league. So a lot of these guys haven't done much. So we're bringing a lot of the early guys in. And then March 5th, I believe, pitcher and catchers for us are going to report. And then we start playing games. Position players report later. And then we start games on the 18th or 19th of March. And then break early April for our opening days in April. So it's business as usual for us. So I know, talking to the guys, they're all excited to get back, you know, cause after the off season, it's a long year. You can't wait to get home. And then after a few weeks at home and after the holidays, you're chomping at the bit to get back at it. So it's always a fun time of year.
And speaking of the minor league guys, especially within the Brewers system, are you excited about this group of players? I know that there's a limited number of names that we can kind of talk about. Obviously, we got to limit our names to the non-40-man guys. But, I mean, what is your thoughts and feelings about this group? I mean, I think it's a good group personally, but I wanted to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, you know what? I think the industry always undervalues us. You know, like, I think the Milwaukee chain takes on the, I'd say identity of the city, you know, blue collar, you know, under the radar type guys. Like, I know LaCroix was never on like anyone's radar, Scooter Jeanette, you know? So like a lot of guys show up, you're like, man, where'd this guy come from? Well, he's been good for his whole time. He just didn't all of a sudden show up in the big league. So, you know, I think we're undervalued throughout the game. You know, I think we're better at the lower levels. We got a lot of good young outfielders, you know, Weimer, Joe Gray, Sal Frelick, Jonathan Caro or Jefferson Caro, a catcher. You got Terrain coming up. So we've got some guys. I mean, it's just like, but I don't think they're ever going to be like, you know, household names until they get to Milwaukee.
It's a hard job too, because when you're trying to rate a prospect, right, from a national perspective, you're going to have guys that slip through the cracks. Baseball America put out their top 100. You know, all these sites put out their top list, and everyone takes that as gospel. But every organization knows their guys that they love and they need to follow, and they know that they're going to fill a need for their team. And one thing I always go back to and I remind folks, given, look, Vinny, you've scouted, I've been in the minor leagues as well, is that just because a guy isn't on the top 100 doesn't mean that other teams aren't looking at them and admiring them. In a way that I kind of measure the health of a farm system is when trades are happening, how, you know, how aggressive are they about trying to get these guys that maybe somebody hasn't heard of? Now, trades are obviously kind of the harder part of your job, Charlie, you know, with scheduling a guy and having to say goodbye and things like that. But come July, how hard is it, you know, knowing that there's going to be rumors swirling, you're going to lose some friends, and what is it like every year in July for a minor league team?
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. You know, I've been in the locker room before on trade deadline. So especially at AAA, it's crazy. But you know, a lot of our guys, like I said, even the guys up in the big leagues, like a lot of our guys won't show up on the top 100 for whatever reason. You know, like, I mean, you know, Ryan Braun, he was, because he was a superstar. But we've had other guys go up there. So I just think that's just something. I just think that someone comes to playing with the Brewers. You just get like undervalued throughout the system. But we got some good guys coming, and I think the fans will be excited when they see them. But it takes time to develop. Like, just because you're drafted high, that doesn't mean you're going there the next year. Like, you know, it's hard. It's a grind. And, you know, each level's got his own stepping stones that the guys have to go through. And I think that's part of the development process.
Yeah, what people don't understand is the last piece of development is what? Is developing in the big leagues. And I think that Craig Counsell has done a great job of allowing guys to struggle a little bit in the big leagues. I'll never forget, Ned Yost did the same thing with J.J. Hardy. I don't know if you remember, he hit 160 in the first half. And then he said, you know, look, I'm going to take losses now for wins later because J.J. developed. So that is something that the Brewers, I feel, do you agree with that? The Brewers have always done a really good job of that.
For sure. I think the culture in Milwaukee is great. Council's done an unbelievable job the last, you know, few years. All the guys around the game, they want to play in Milwaukee. Like, that's like, it's a fun place. The fans are great. The park, you play at the same time every night at home. You don't have to worry about delays, which is a big deal for guys, you know, on the routines. But around the league, I know guys want to play in Milwaukee. Like, you can tell the guys have fun. And even the guys that come over midseason just jump right in. Like, it's nothing, you know, you don't have to change anything. You just hop right on board. So I think Counts has done a great job. And the front office, I think, has done a great job acquiring pieces of that fit in. But it's a great place to play. And that is the final piece. And I know that's a tough spot to be on, you know, to see a guy fail. But you learn more from failing sometimes than you do succeeding. And I think the guys that come up and struggle a little bit, you know, that just builds calluses for them, and they're going to be better off in the long run.
Learning from failure, that's
an old adage, obviously. Oh, sorry, Dom. Yeah, no, real quick, an old adage, obviously, and I think you were the first one to tell me this. It's easy to make it to the big leagues, but it's compared to how hard it is to stay, obviously.
Oh, for sure, I mean, for sure. It's tough, and nowadays you got to have 8 bats in the lineup, or 9 now with the DH probably, but yeah, I mean, you've got to, you know, you got to hit to stay in the big leagues, and there's no doubt about it. You know, there's no more defensive guys playing up the middle or, you know, like that. Those guys are a dying breed. So thank God I got out when I did. I've never would have played.
Don't you love this spirit from Charlie Green? Man, what a fun interview he was last week. We want to jump in real quick, though, tell you about Bet Online, where the game starts. Bet Online is the number one place for you to wager on all of your favorite sports as we head into championship weekend. If you listened to yesterday's pod, we were talking in the middle of the crazy Bills-Chiefs game. It's crazy to think that Patrick Mahomes has been to four straight AFC championship games, and you can actually wager with Bet Online on it. You've got a new year and a new desktop site as well for them, too, and you're going to get a 50% welcome bonus when you use the promo code LOCKEDON. That's all one word. LOCKEDON, locked on, and you're going to get a 50% welcome. So in essence, if you drop $100 on your first deposit, you're going to get $50 back, and it's going to become a $150 deposit. You've got football, obviously, this coming weekend. Basketball is ongoing. All-Star game coming up. Hockey, boxing, UFC, casino games. You've got it all at BetOnline. It's the fastest and easiest way to wager on all your favorite sports where the game starts. BetOnline.
It's just a changing world. It changes on the dime. And speaking of changes, something that's coming to AAA, it was reported last week by the Associated Press that the automated strike zone is coming to AAA next year. What do you know and what can you share about what you've seen and heard so far about what's called the ABS, the automated ball strike system?
It's going to change the way it looks. I've seen it in the fall league the last 2 years. 2 years ago, it was a little rough. It got better last year, but it's going to look rough. You know, it's going to look like there's some pitches that are in, that are catch-up sets up in, and the balls go away and it nicks the corner. So it's going to look odd for a lot of people. It's going to be mostly out west. Like, I think the old PCL has them. I think Nashville's division, I think only Charlotte is the only one in the east that has it. The Florida State League, or the old Florida State League, had a bunch of them last year, and it was like mixed reviews, you know, like some of the blowout games in the ninth inning when you want the game to speed up a little, you know, that tight zone, you know, it was a little rough for scouts, they said. But yeah, I think I'm not a big fan of it, to be honest, because I think that takes away a skill from a catcher that's worked on it for years. I mean, catchers for years have worked on framing, or whatever you want to call it, receiving, and now just to take it out and have it have no value, it's going to be tough. So, you know, it's definitely going to look different on TV. I can promise you that.
Yeah, following up on that, too, is I spent the 2019 year covering the Fall League, and that was the first year they had it. They actually had it in their Fall Stars game, their All-Star game. And I was on the call for this game, and literally, first batter of the game, there's a terrible curveball. Like, he spun it too hard. It's clearly below the knees, but because it's when the guy, when it crosses the zone, and it was still, you know, being worked out, first AB of the game, you know, the umpire just sheepishly goes, well, strike three. You know, it's like, he knows it's not a strike, and he knows it would never be called a strike. But these are kind of why it's being tested, right? I mean, these are the moments like, look, I know everyone's trying to get development and trying to learn it, but Rob Manfred's made it clear he wants this in the big leagues at some point. And someone's got to get used to it, and they got to test it somewhere. And I guess AAA is going to be the guinea pig this year.
For sure. They've moved it back a little. It used to be the front part of the plate. And Vinny, you know, the guys that have the sharp breaking curveball that bounce, that nicks the front part of the bottom of the zone, it's unhittable. Like, I don't care who you are, it's bouncing. So I think they've moved the plate back a little, but there's going to be a lot of low breaking balls, because technically those are strikes, especially like the sharp breaking ball that's at the bottom of the zone. It nicks it. Some catchers, depending on how deep they are, they may block strike threes. Maybe. And that's going to be an odd look for guys. You know, it's always been because you see the box on TV. It's not always correct, but the box is on when they're called a little outside that, you know, it looks a little rough, but it's going to be a changer. But I've seen it. I mean, they've gotten a little better at it. I will say that from the time you saw it in 19. I know there's a video going around of like the a mockery almost like block strike threes. But that's what it's going to. I think I think a lot of the umpires would go toe to toe with a machine almost, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think some of the guys are very good at that. And they're, especially guys coming up who are used to that and used to that technology and being graded on it. I think a lot of those young umpires are very good.
I'm not a fan. I'm just going to go on record and say I think this is a terrible idea for the game. Personally, you know, I think I might be in the minority here, especially with the things that you see on Twitter, where I hate the grading of the umpires. And I know, Dom, I don't know how you feel about this, actually.
It.
But I know some guys love it.
You hate it? Absolutely hate it.
Okay. I think you're taking away a part of the game that was has been part of the game forever. They've allowed umpires to have some subjectivity to their strike zones, and I love that, right? Just like a referee in the NFL, they have some subjectivity to what they're calling for pass interference. So are we going to go to sensors in the NFL? If a guy gets nicked, that's pass interference. Let's draw the flag, right? I'm going to go on record and say I absolutely hate this. And like you said, Charlie, about the framing piece, you have taken guys like Omar Narvaez, who is one of the worst framers in the league, and become one of the best framers. Manny Pena, same thing. I mean, you've helped so many guys with the framing piece and kind of learn how to steal strikes, and that's going to be all for naught at this point. So, I mean, are you going to start teaching guys to stand up and catch so they can throw guys out? Like, because the strike zone's not going to matter anymore.
You're right. You're right. And that's changed. Like, it's going to come block and throw, really, because it's not just keep the ball in front. So I know teams are experimenting with guys. Like, do you draft a bat that can just keep the ball in front, you know? But then I think throwing is going to become more of an issue, because when you put like a less than average thrower back there, you're going to open the game up. So it's going to be more blocking and throwing, because receiving is going to be obsolete. So it's crazy how it's changed, because for years, guys have been paid for how they receive. I mean, there's been big contracts due to guys controlling the zone and framing well. And now, just to take it out, it's going to be odd. Like I said, the fans are going to have to get used to seeing it, because it's a different looking game. It is when the catcher's set up here and there's a ball, looks like a foot outside, and it nicks the outside corner, you know? So it's going to be crazy for everyone, for sure.
No kidding. Yeah, it's going to be a big adjustment. But now let's get to a little lighter subject here as well. I did want to pick your brain in a little fun exercise on five names I've written down, and these are the names I think a lot of people have heard of when it comes to the Brewers prospects. I'm going to say their name, and I want you to tell me the first word that pops into your mind, okay? So I'm going to start things off with Ethan Small.
Funky.
I like that. Funky. Bryce Terang.
Gamer.
Sal Frelick.
Gamer.
Garrett Mitchell.
Tools.
And Joey Weimer.
Lightning.
I think of Wonder Boy every time I see him. You know, I just think, yeah, I love the Lightning.
I joke with Vinny. It's like I said, it's Hunter Pence and Eric Burns had a kid. He's big. He's physical, and he's got energy. Like, he was a talk of the fall league until he got hurt. But he just looks the part. You know, he got the blonde Goldilocks, and he had a hell of a run. Like, honestly, I don't remember of anybody we've ever had that's had a run like that and then moved up a level and got better and had, you know, did more damage. Like, that's hard to do. Like, there's usually an adjustment period for whatever level you go to. And for him to jump in and, like, his numbers got better in Appleton, which is scary to think.
Yeah, we've talked about those five guys ad nauseum for sure.
And this is a guy that didn't really show up in college, right? He kind of showed up, and it's kind of a rare breed. Usually guys show up in college, have huge numbers in college, and that's what kind of the algorithm that teams are drafting off of. But this guy did not. That was a great, great acquisition by the Brewers in the draft.
And yeah, our guy saw his tools. 20. Yeah, 2020. Yeah, he was. Our guy saw his tools in the cape, and then I think he hit more home runs last year than he did his whole college career, if I'm not mistaken. Which is crazy to do, you know, in one season. But yeah, he plays. I mean, you notice him when you go to a field. You know, that's the best thing I can say. You know, from the hair to the way he plays, and he's aggressive. I mean, he's super aggressive. So fun to watch.
Yeah. Green, I really appreciate your time. I got one more question. I noticed that you've got the West Virginia Mountaineers t-shirt on. What?
Yeah.
So this is the man, Garrett. I'm a West Virginia Mountaineers fan at this point. Obviously, I'm still a Badgers fan, everybody, so don't worry about that. But tell us about your son and his story, because I remember him when he was – 9 years old, taking in the shower, you know, after a game with the rest of the guys in Nashville. What a great kid all the way through. Tell us.
Yeah, he's a COVID freshman, so he'll be a sophomore next year. You know, he plays. He was the backup quarterback up there at West Virginia this year, so he got to play in all but He didn't play in the first game, and then he missed the game because of a concussion. But yeah, he got to play in every game, and he loves college football. It's big time football, so he enjoys the physicality. He was a good catcher, but he chose the football route. So, but he was a good catcher, but he's going up around the game, so he's got it in his blood. I think that's where all the competitiveness comes from, because that's a competitive sport. But he enjoys it. So yeah, he misses baseball a little bit, but he loves football. So that takes it.
If anybody has a chance to take a look at some of his highlights on just go to YouTube and Google Garrett Green, and you'll see a lot of his high school highlights, and is some of his college stuff on there now?
Yeah, Green? It is. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's fun to watch. Think of Baker Mayfield, but faster and more athletic, honestly. I see a bright future. The scout in me is seeing a bright future. I wasn't an NFL scout, but I'm rooting like hell for him. So, but Greeny, man, I can't thank you enough for coming on. This was a pleasure. Yeah, hope to have you on again sometime. I mean, obviously I love talking baseball with you. I know Dom does too. The energy you bring is always a pleasure. So really, really appreciate it.
Have me on when you talk about the big league guys.
Absolutely.
Will do.
So, okay. Thanks, guys.